Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
When you're popular or you're hot, per se, you get a ton of calls, texts, people want to help you out. When you're let go or fired, you kind of find out who's really care about you on a personal level. It was amazing, like for me, like the number of people that would call me because I was part of Buzz Peterson's staff, because everybody know Buzz is super connected. Once we was let go as a staff, my phone got dry.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm Adam Gordon, and today's episode is an excerpt from a live Zoom session with UNC Greensboro assistant coach Andre Gray. It won't take long listening to this conversation to realize why Andre's been so successful. He is incredibly down to earth, genuine, honest, and transparent in everything that he says. He does a great job talking about his journey and then answering questions from our audience. We hope you guys enjoy. If you're interested in being a part of Zoom sessions like this and have the ability to ask your questions directly to our guests, we do these on a daily basis now during the off season. In fact, multiple a day. You can do so, and you can become a part of this by joining Rising Coaches. Write us a review, subscribe to the podcast, and check us out at risingcoaches.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Rising Coaches Association, the biggest coaching tree in all of basketball. Sign up for the Rising Coaches Association now for just $120 a year and become part of our community, relationships, and development. We talk about it all the time. There's no straight lines in this profession. There's only ups and downs. You need a community that knows exactly what you're going through and has been there before to help lean on during the rough times of the industry. You need genuine relationships, not just exchanging numbers, not just meeting new people at the Final Four in the off season. You should be doing it all year round, and we provide tremendous opportunities to create those genuine relationships all through the year. And finally, development. We have so much content and so many resources so that you can work on your craft and become a better coach. Because we put such a premium and an emphasis on helping you establish new, genuine relationships, it takes all of the political BS side of the business out of the equation for you. All of that gets removed off of your plate. You can just worry about being you, making new friends in the business, and working on your craft and becoming the best coach that you can be and impacting the people that you're around on a daily basis. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com.
Again, first of all, thank you guys for having me on. Like I said, Rising Coaches, I remember watching you guys come along and watching y'all vision grow into something way bigger than just yourselves. And I think that's why we all coach. We want to impact people more than in a way that makes the game grow and to make our families grow and to make just the love of the game and people. The easiest way I always try to do this thing is I always try to tell my story first. I know Lepore tweeted out that I'm one of the great storytellers. I didn't realize I was. I ramble so much, so I jump around a lot when I talk. So if anything you guys that I say that you guys need more information about, let me know. But as Adam just said, I started my career actually as a middle school coach 23 years ago. And I'm like probably atypical for most of you guys on the screen. I wasn't one of those guys who grew up wanting to be a coach. I didn't really even understand exactly what that meant. I played Division III basketball at a school called Methodist College in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I went to Fayetteville State University as a football player directly after high school. So I played all sports in a little small town. And again, I always, when I watched games growing up, I didn't think about being the next John Thompson. I wanted to be the next Michael Jordan or the next Patrick Ewing. So I never really thought from a coaching perspective until I matured. Once I got to Methodist College and starting to be a part of that team and met some really good guys, that's what got me wanting to teach. And now at that time, I wanted to be a high school football coach. That was my ultimate goal in life, was to be a high school football coach. So I got my degree in education with physical education. And then I took my first job at Clayton Middle School. My first job at Clayton, I coached both football and basketball. And with doing both, I learned that in basketball, you kind of can manipulate the game a little bit more. You didn't necessarily have to have the best players, the biggest guys. In football, I thought if you're bigger, faster, and stronger, you can win unless you was an idiot. In basketball, you can do things if you're disadvantaged to give yourself a chance. You can run some junk defenses. You can hold the ball. You can do things in the game of basketball that you can't necessarily do in football. So that what took me towards the basketball path. My second job was actually a high school job in a little town called Oxford. And during that time, I was working the camps. I started working five-star camp. I had a friend who was the head counselor at five-star who got me working that camp. And being around those college coaches, and I had a kid on my team who led the state of North Carolina in scoring, and watching the coaches come in and talk to him is what took me to like, damn, you know, like, I could coach basketball and go get the players I want to coach. So that's kind of cool. Maybe I'll try college. So I was blessed. A position opened up at the school I played at. I took a significant financial hit. My wife is a sweetheart for letting me do it. But she knows I'm a little bit quirky, and when I get something in my head, I won't let it go until I quench that thirst. So I went down to Methodist College. I made $2,000 spread over 10 months. And it got taxed. And my job was, I was the head JV coach, assistant varsity coach for that money. And of course, I had to try to find ways to make extra money. So one year I took a job as the safe schools coordinator, assistant at a high school. The next year I wound up doing some intramurals at the local community college. And just a way to kind of make money and also do my job. But my time at Methodist is what fueled me to want to try to pursue college basketball full time. I didn't understand the business. I didn't understand that working 21 hours a day wasn't normal. I didn't understand that $2,000 wasn't a lot of money. I thought that's what all college coaches got paid. But once I started trying to pursue the profession, I wanted to not only coach at college, I said, shoot, I want to try to go somewhere and coach where I could give scholarships, where I could let kids go play for free. So I moved up to Division II. I was at Wingate University for 4 years. Had some success there. Again, watching the people move, watching the business go on. Decided I wanted to try to pursue Division I, and I got my first Division I job at Gardner-Webb University. But guys, I don't know most guys in this room, but in North Carolina, I'm called, most people refer to me as Mr. North Carolina. I'm like a unicorn in this profession. I'm like the only dude in America that worked the same state his whole career as an assistant. And I've had like 8 to 10. I can't even count how many jobs I had. And they've all been in the state of North Carolina. I worked at Gardner-Webb, worked at Western Carolina, worked at UNC Wilmington, worked at Winston-Salem State, worked at UNC Charlotte. And now I'm at UNC Greensboro in my second year. I'm going into my third year. So it's been fun. I had some great experiences, met some great dudes, got to work with some great young men. And I wouldn't trade my career for anybody's. It's been fun to be a part of. Well, Adam asked me to talk about this thing. He talked about the ups and downs of this profession. It was my topic. And I started thinking about it last night when I saw it. It's like, I don't know if I necessarily had ups and downs. I looked at my downs as kind of I've learned from. And I've been able to pick and grow from every situation I've been in so far. My career got off kind of, again, different because I don't come from a coaching tree. I don't know anything about college basketball besides what I learned by watching and observing. So my growth in the business from going from level to level to level was kind of quick in college basketball terms. And I didn't realize at the time, I just was working and trying to meet people. So when I went from Methodist to Wingate to Gardner-Webb to Western to Wilmington, I was on this so-called track. You know, I went from working at a Division III school to working with Buzz Peterson at the time at UNC Wilmington, who was in the Carolina family and the Carolina tree, is supposed to be some super duper connected guy. And I thought I arrived. But that was the first time in my career that I was on a part of a staff that got let go. So I learned so much from that situation about the business, like how the coaching staff and the administration got to be on the same page. We had APR issues at UNC Wilmington, something I'd never even heard the word before. So we wound up having the postseason ban our second year there. And I learned that before I interviewed for a job, I asked about the APR. Like, hey, man, what's your APR situation? So I've learned so much from that situation. It's been amazing. And then again, I was a little frustrated with the business. Always had like a interest in the HBCU platform. So for Wilmington, I went to Winston-Salem State to just kind of see what it was like on the HBCU side as from a coach's perspective. So I did that for a year, and it was a lot of growth there. First time I worked for a young head coach, first time I worked for a first-time head coach. So I learned so much from him as far as, like, make sure if I ever get an opportunity to lead the program, that I spend time thinking about what kind of people I want to have around me. So I learned so much from him. And then from there, I went to UNC Charlotte, again, with Mark Price, another first-time coach, first-time college guy. He was an NBA guy up to that point. Again, learned kind of the same lessons with Mark. And, again, you got to be sure of your staff. Your staff seems to be the number one thing when you're trying to build a college program. Everybody got to be on the same page, and you got to have a clear vision for what you want. And then, of course, like I told you guys a second ago, I went from Charlotte to here, UNC Greensboro, here with Wes Miller. You guys good? The one thing, again, in this area, I'm kind of known, like I said, Mr. North Carolina, and I'm really known for helping bring guys behind me up. And I always get asked, like, what advice do I give guys who want to get in the business, want to move in the business? And I always start my storytelling days. Like, I think it's 100% about relationships. You never really know how people are connected. It could be 6 degrees of separation from you guys, but you'd be amazed by treating people the right way, how it come back full circle. And now I start going my career backwards to kind of illustrate that point. Getting here to Greensboro, me and Wes Miller have been friends for as long as he's been coaching. When he finished playing, he actually interviewed for a job at Gardner Webb when I was there, and that's how we met. And we just kind of hit it off on a personal level because I like to work, and he's kind of a grinder. We have different, totally different paths. You know, anybody that know him know he's come from pretty good money. I come from nothing. But we also have to fight some of the stereotypes in this business as far as trying to grow. So we kind of developed a relationship that way. The UNC Charlotte job I got was simple. I worked with Buzz Peterson at UNC Wilmington. When Mark Price got it, he didn't know many college guys. I'm known to be able to recruit the state. So Buzz Peterson recommended me to join Mark Price's staff. I got on at Winston-Salem State because the guy who became the head coach was good friends with one of my fraternity brothers who I went to college with when I was at Fayetteville State. I got on at Wilmington because I got to know Buzz Peterson through a guy named Matt McMahon, who's now the head coach of Murray State. I got to know Matt because I worked through a camp with Tim Kaine, who was his assistant, who was his high school teammate. So that was a relationship I had from there. The Gardner Webb thing was probably the only job I got where I didn't know somebody on staff, but it was a guy named Bruce Evans, who was one of Rick Scruggs' assistants. And me and Bruce got to know each other because he was at one point coaching in my wife's hometown. And I used to go sit in his office and pick his brain sometimes. And so when the position opened at Gardner Webb, he didn't want to recommend me that spot. The job at Wingate, I got through a guy named Rob Dooley. Me and Dooley used to work at Campbell Camp together and just did a good job at camp, got to know each other a little bit. He recommended me for that spot. And then we go to my very first college job. That was simply because the guy who was the head coach was my assistant when I played. And my head coach was the AD at the time. So, and I say that to mean, like, relationships is everything. What you guys, this platform is phenomenal. You guys are connected in this way. So don't lose sight of building relationships. And also understand that people are way more connected than you realize, especially in this business. So try to treat everybody nice and treat them well. It'll help you in the long run. Any questions? And again, I know I jump around and ramble a ton, so any questions jump on anybody's mind?
I'll get you started. Do you think, like, having been in that North Carolina region your whole career, is that something, like, people should try to focus on as getting, like, an area that they're known for? Or is it just kind of how it worked out for you?
I say yes and no. Part of my deal was when I first got in the business, one of the old guys' advice to me was try to find something that you can do that nobody else can do. Try to find something that you can hang your hat on so when you sit in front of somebody to interview that you can say, this is my deal. And I just did it out the air. I just pulled out, man, I'm going to know every kid in North Carolina. I'm going to learn every freaking player here. I'm going to learn all the coaches. I'm going to learn all the, at the time, AAU wasn't big. But I wanted to learn all the guys who ran camps. So I tried to learn everybody. I couldn't tell you how many times at night I slept in my car. I slept in people's floors and hotel rooms, going to nationals. I used to go to all the AAU tournaments. I kind of made that my niche. And what happened was, started getting out that I knew who all the players were. And that's how I was able to build some relationships with high school guys. But the other side of that is, I interviewed for Wilmington twice. I interviewed for when Buzz Peterson first got the job. And I remember sitting in his office, and I thought I crushed the interview. I was like, man, that's probably the best interview I ever had. Wilmington is close to home. And I went in there prepared. I knew so much about the school and about the area. And I remember when he called me, he's like, Dre, I'm going in a different direction. I already got a Carolina guy on my staff. And he was talking about Matt McMahon at the time. And I laughed at this. I was like, man, shit, I'll tell Matt everybody that he's a Carolina guy. I'm going to give Matt his information. But it also made me understand that I had to broaden my scope a little bit. Now, I've always knew I could recruit other areas, but I was always so strong in the Carolinas that I never felt like I really needed to. I was able to get a good enough player out of North Carolina that I didn't have to go to Texas to get one. But to shorten the story some, so I got so pissed I didn't get the Wilmington job. And I knew I had a lot of connections through Five Star, and Texas was somewhere I knew a lot of people that would help me. So I was like, man, I'm going to show people. I was the recruit coordinator at Western Carolina. I told the other guys on staff, and I was the old guy on staff, so they had to listen to me. I was like, hey, don't bring me a Carolina kid. We're not signing a freaking kid from North Carolina in this class. I'm going to say they ain't good enough. We ain't going to take one. And that was ignorant on my part. But don't do that. But I was like, we're going to recruit kids from other states in this class. We're going to do a whole class of non-North Carolina kids. So I started calling my connections in Georgia and Florida and Texas, and how the world comes full circle. I have a real good friend that's in Texas, and he was trying to teach me the landscape of the Dallas kids. And I'm sitting in the gym 6 o'clock in the morning, and lo and behold, Buzz Peterson walks in the gym. And he just falls, damn, boy, you're everywhere. And that moment was, I really believe that's why I got the job. Like, that moment, he'd call me every week after that. Like, when the position opened up the following year, I knew I was getting the job in January before the position even opened, because we knew the guy who was leaving was going to leave. So Buzz, me and Buzz had conversations all year about, hey, when this guy leave, this spot is yours. So I knew I had the spot. I got to pick when I interviewed, and I got to pick my start date before the job even posted on social media or anything. So I think parts of it is to be strong. You got to have something that you're known for. But the other part, I think it helps that you have relationships in other places as well, because you never know when you're going to have to call on guys from outside.
For sure. Thanks. Mendel, you got a question? Go ahead and make sure you guys introduce yourself first before you ask.
Hey, Coach Gray, how you doing?
I'm pretty good.
All right. My name is Mendel out of Minnesota here with the Timberwolves and Lynx Academy. You talked about a little bit when you find out the first time you got let go, the staff got let go. Elaborate a little bit more on that transition. What did you do after you realized, okay, I don't have a job? What's the next step? What's that transition was like for you?
Yeah, you know, I've been blessed overall, because I think 18, 19 years of college coach, I've been without a job, like technically for about 4 weeks total, which is crazy in this business. So I have never had a long gap of being unemployed. The one thing that I took from that experience of being fired was, when you're popular or you're hot, per se, you get a ton of calls, texts, people want to help you out. When you're let go or fired, you kind of find out who's really care about you on a personal level. It was amazing, like for me, like the number of people that would call me because I was part of Buzz Peterson's staff. Because everybody know Buzz is super connected. And, you know, I don't know if you know, but he's right now the assistant GM with the Hornets. Everybody know his background with playing for Dean and being Michael Jordan's best friend. So people would reach out to me all the time because I was close to Buzz. Once we was let go as a staff, my phone got dry. You know, like only my closest friends would call me and entertain me. And sometimes I knew where I was going. 2 weeks after, 3 weeks after we got fired. And I had an opportunity the week of, Buzz tried to get me to go to ETSU. with Murray Bartow, but I didn't want to go. So I could have had a job immediately after. And I knew where I was going for weeks, but it was a gap between my fire date to my start date. And I sometimes wanted to call and just talk. It was amazing. Some guys would return my texts and return my calls. And that was the thing I learned about from that situation, probably most. Like, we all have friends in this business, but you got to be careful of putting trust in people that you're not sure are going to relate back to you, because we all going to have peaks and valleys. There, everybody say, you've been fired, or you're about to get fired in this business. It's been probably four or five guys in the history of college basketball who got to walk away on their home terms. Everybody, Bobby Knight got fired, you know. Like, so it happens to everybody.
Appreciate you.
No problem.
Travis, go ahead.
Coach, what's up, man?
How's it going, fam?
Doing all right. We met through Darren Cone a couple years back.
D-Cone.
He oftentimes talk about how he always got jobs he never went after. You moved all through North Carolina throughout your entire career. How many jobs did you actually go after, and how many jobs did you just get a phone call and say, hey, do you want to be a part of this staff and a part of this program?
Man, I've heard probably more than those than anybody in the country. initially, because I didn't understand the business. Every job isn't for everyone, and it's hard to get jobs with people that don't know you. It's been my experience. I've gotten so old now, like I was joking about earlier, I'm OG now. So my last few jobs, I kind of knew I was going before they happened. I not understanding the business when I was young. I would apply for a lot of jobs because I saw them online and things of that nature. I've learned that most of the time when jobs get posted, they have already filled. So I don't even waste my time with those situations. Now, word of mouth is so important. So just having a good network of friends that would be honest with you is like, hey, Dre, I heard XYZ is leaving Appalachian State or a finalist for a job at Bowling Green University. You might want to reach out to this head coach, and if you don't know him, and make it known that you have some interest in that position. So it's just like the word of mouth is so huge from my standpoint in this business. So lately, it haven't had to do it much, but early on in my career, man, I still save my letters. I'll save every rejection letter. If I get a chance to coach against a coach that told me no, I try to run up the score if I got a better team. And that's just ignorance on my part. But people don't hire folks they don't know, has been my experience. And D. Cone is my man. You know that, right?
D. Cone out his mind.
Yeah, like D. Cone, no, like, I don't know if anybody else in this room knows Darren Cone, and y'all can shut me up because, again, I'm a storyteller. They already warned you guys first. But when I was trying to make my name as a North Carolina guy, D. Cone got hired as an assistant at High Point University, and he didn't know a squat about North Carolina. And one thing I always did, I was like, this dude don't know anything about North Carolina. And he was kind of funny, kind of cool. So I kind of used Cone as, he was like my financial backing for me learning the state of North Carolina. So I was like, hey, Cone, man, there's a kid in Charlotte we need to go see. Like, they got a player on their team that you use too. So I jump in the car, and Cone would get the hotels, and he would drive. I'd just jump in the car with him. That's how I got to see a lot of the players around North Carolina while I was trying to grow my network. And that Final Fours and things of that nature, I would sleep on his floor. Sometimes I found out I used to do a lot of where he went in recruiting. So when he went to Nationals, I'd jump in the car with him and stay in his room and things of that nature. So Cone was, that was my guy. And then exchange, he used me back because in exchange as a D3 coach, we didn't have as many rules. So I could talk to everybody. So he'd be like, hey, Dre, go get that parent phone number. So I just went across the gym to get the number for the mama or for the kid. So that was kind of ideal.
Okay, quick break to talk about one of our sponsors. I'm excited to tell you about them. We have a new partner. They're called Fulcrum Tech. Fulcrum Technologies works with teams in the ACC, SEC, Pac-12, and more to solve their video needs while saving them money. Angles, their elite video analysis product, allows multiple angle video analysis, in-depth statistics, and importing and exporting of data and video from other systems, all while saving teams thousands of dollars. Fulcrum's Piston product can give you multiple angle instant replay right on the court, both for officials and for immediate teaching. Send them a DM on Twitter at Fulcrum Tech without an H at the end, so FulcrumTech, or email sales@fulcrumtech.com to learn more. Do more, save money, regain the leverage with Fulcrum Tech. We got a question here from Jonathan.
Hey, Coach, Jonathan Finkel here. What advice would you give someone who is very new in the business, you know, trying to expand their network? You know, how do you quote unquote meet people?
And that question comes up all the time. I think the biggest thing is just being sincere with the people that you do meet, and spend time. Don't just wait until something happens before you reach out to them. That's one of the biggest mistakes I see some of the young guys make. Like right now, we all in the house, so of course they're reaching out to people. But then they won't reach out to folks again until next March. And if you do that, like, people won't know what you're reaching out for. In March, what happens, jobs are open. So reach out to people, like, try to study people and what they have going on in their lives and what they have going on with the team. Like, if they happen to sign a recruit and you catch them online, like, shoot them a text then and see if you to get some feedback and information back from them. And just try to build real relationships. I always say, like, us college basketball folks are professional liars. It sounds nasty, but it's the truth. We manipulate for a living. We manipulate our kids to make them think that they're great. We manipulate those recruits to try to get them to come on campus. We manipulate those parents to try to get them to believe they're going to take care of their players. We manipulate athletic directors to get them convinced them that we know what we're doing. So most of the time, as professional manipulators, we've been doing it so long and so much that we know when you're full of crap. You know, like, you might not show it right away, but eventually you're going to pick up on it. So if somebody you don't feel comfortable with, somebody you don't like, don't even mess with them people. Don't be mean to them, because you might have a 6 degrees of separation might come back around on you. But if somebody you don't feel comfortable with, somebody you don't respond back to you, don't mess with them no more. Just move on to guys that do. And that's how you're going to build a real network. And you'd be surprised how it come back full circle for you sometimes. Like, somebody else might come back and vouch for you one day. Like, hey, no, that's my guy. I'm like, damn, I know he's a good guy. So just try to be as sincere as possible with it as you're trying to grow it. Because the more real relationships is how I found I survived, is having real relationships, people that call for me and can vouch for me as a person.
Coach Gray, I have a question for you. Kareem Brown, Niagara County Community College. So I want you to not kind of look at your past, and you've just started 2 years ago, and obviously networking is extremely important. Where do you think you would start, whether it be social media, camps, where in the last 2 years, what do you think you've learned the most where you could say, hey, I need to start doing this in order to start promoting yourself, in order to start getting the business, in order to start networking? What are some one or two things you think are really important that you've learned in the last 2 years?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm old here, right, bro? You might miss my beginning. It's my 23rd.
Well, no, I did hear your beginning, because I am part of those five stars. I worked.
Oh, cool.
Where they ended up.
I think the biggest thing is, like I said, just like I just asked in a second, I think it's making real relationships. Making genuine relationships. I'm on Twitter a lot, personally, and it's because I'm silly and I don't have no life. So I'm going to tweet a ton of random crap all the time. But I think just trying to build relationships, like real, real relationships, is the key to this thing. I was talking about it before everybody got on. One of my blessings was when I first started coaching, the camps, the five stars and stuff existed. And back then, as you know, Division I guys was able to work camps. So they got to see you work, and you got to see them work. And you got to build some real relationships by them seeing what you was about. Now, like, we don't get the opportunity to see the guys behind us, even some of the guys beside us work. We don't get to see what they do on a day-to-day basis. So social media becomes such a big platform now, because this is what we have to base a lot of our opinions off of. So using it, I think, is huge, but I don't think there's any substitute for building, like, real, genuine relationships with people. Because they're going to become your mouthpiece. They're going to be like when the job opened up, that's who's going to call one of their buddies. Hey, man, I know this guy Kareem, man. He's going to be great for that spot. That's been my experiences on how this business works.
We got a question here from Brant.
Coach Brant Daniels, just wanted to know, as you navigated levels in your career, what did you find being the most difficult part of the transition from small college to Division I and then back and forth?
Yeah, again, thankfully for me, ignorance is bliss. When I was moving from level to level to begin with, I didn't get it. I didn't really understand what the differences were. Going from Division III to Division II, the biggest thing was being able to give scholarships now was huge because I couldn't give them at Division III. Part of the reasons why I had a desire to move from D3 to D2 was when I was sitting some of those families at Methodist College, and this is my alma mater, so nothing bad about it. But our target kid was a poor kid with good grades. And most of those kids didn't have academic or families. So when you sat in those living rooms with those single moms and uncles and you tried to convince them to come play Division III basketball for $40,000 a year, they wasn't knowledgeable enough to know that maybe I need to hang up my shoes and go to a state college and just play intramurals or something. So you wound up just putting so many families in debt. And that's why I had a desire to try to recruit scholarships where I could kind of get back. I'm going to get basketball out of you, but it sucks. Like, it broke my heart sometimes having to tell some of the families, like, hey, man, you got to come up with this $30,000 a year. One of the closest relationships I have now is one of my players at Methodist. And I got so much respect for him as a young man because he was an All-American at a D3 school. And he had to give up his career because his younger brother wanted to go to college too. So he wound up transferring to a school back home where it wasn't as big a financial hit for his family. I remember every semester when I coached him, his dad would write a check to Methodist and they would bounce. But they all with the school would make him write a check so he could go back to school each semester as this kid was trying to grow. So that was the thing that, for me, my desire to move to D2. Once I got up there, I realized the beauty of Division III is that the guys do play for free. So the ones that's out there, they love the ball. You know, sometimes at D2, I found that some of the guys was coming because they was able to get some money. So that was like one of the biggest things for me. Then Division I from Division II, kind of the same thing. Like, we got to spend so much time and digging in why guys play. The D2 guys are kind of the same. They wanted to play college ball. Some of them wanted to get a little bit of scholarship money, but they didn't really think about chasing the NBA dreams much during that time. See, man, when I got to Division I, everybody talked about wanting to play after college. They wanted to try to play for what's next rather than for the moment. It's like my D2 kids was more caught up in the moment. And as a Division I coach and recruiter, that's one of the biggest challenges is trying to figure out why guys want to play, what motivates them to play. Because every program is different than what they want out of their kids. So I try to spend as much time as possible trying to research what's the kids' why. Like, why do you want to play? And make sure that fits with what the head coach's philosophy is. And did that answer your question?
Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
Okay, we got a question here from Daria. Go ahead, Daria.
Hey, Coach. Daria Sharova. I'm an assistant at Montreat College, North Carolina. So you was talking about how you want to know every kid in the state, you know, and I've been in Montreat for 3 years, and I always make myself as a goal. I want to know every program and every kid in our state, you know, because I want to make sure if there's some girl, I can go and see her, you know. But I guess my question is, how do you manage it? You know, our state is not small, you know, and we have so many schools and so many programs and so many wonderful players, you know, that sometimes I get like, not overwhelmed, but like, I want to go there, you know, and I have to like figure it out. What do I prioritize above one to another, you know?
Yes, man, that's a good question. And just think about this 20 years ago when I was doing it, It was before social media, and it was really before scouting services and stuff. And I had to rely on the local newspapers a ton. It was a link then back in the day that had every local newspaper in the state of North Carolina on it. And you could click on the link and you could get that town's paper. And that's kind of how you try to figure out names. But to be honest with you, it just took a lot of time. I've kind of learned, like, that's my AAU ball was, like I say, first growing up. It wasn't as big as it is now, but they would have a lot of tournaments, like local tournaments back then. And I would just go to those all the time. Like on my weekends, I'd just sit in random tournaments in Hickory, North Carolina, just watching teams, watching kids. But that was for me. One thing I used to try to keep notes for every kid I saw, regardless of level. And again, I get back to storytelling mode now, but Dave Tellup, I'm sure everybody here knows Dave. He used to do a thing called the Top 100 in North Carolina. And one of the things that made my reputation grow in the state was I used to help Dave pick his top 100. I was like behind the scenes telling him who the kids were that on the outskirts, the east coast of North Carolina and out there in the mountains. But it just took a lot of time. I enjoyed doing it. I'm a dude with no real hobbies. So when I'm sitting around, I like watching film and talking to folks and things of that nature. So it took a lot of time. And eventually if people start learning what you're trying to do and they start sending you stuff like, hey, Coach Gray, there's a kid up at Red Springs High School up the road, or a relationship that you have, people start calling you back. So that was my way of figuring it out and navigating it. And again, this was before all the social media. Now you got such an advantage. I always say I don't use the scouting services for recruiting purposes anymore. I think the rankings are biased a lot of times. But I like using those things for list because they may not have the kid ranked where they should be ranked, but they got the name in the school. Yeah. So start picking out where you're going to go. Relying on my guys at higher levels to send me the list that they would get and the contacts that they had. And again, and like I said earlier, we was able to do camps a ton. So I was able to go to a lot of camps and I spent all summer working camps and things of that nature. So that's kind of how I grew it.
And your purpose, can I ask one more?
For sure. Yeah.
So, and you like, you know, there are some coaches I know in AAU and high schools and everything, but sometimes like I'll get a kid and I was like, my gosh, how do I miss her, you know? And I always think about my aunt, you know, maybe I didn't come to the coach, introduce myself, or maybe like, are you purposely like, when you come to see a high school game, for example, do you go purposely introduce yourself to a coach or you just take a note about the kids?
It really kind of depends on now, to be honest, like in this area, of course, like most of the people on the men's side kind of know me because I've been around for so long. When I get in a situation where I don't know the coach or know the kid as well or at all, I like to go in without my school gear on. One of the big things for me when I'm evaluating the kid, I care as much about the stuff that don't get show up in stat sheets, do the stuff that does. So I prefer sometimes when they don't know I'm there because I want to see how you play when you don't think nobody's watching. Yeah. Not sense at all. So it just kind of depends on the men's side, especially. Relationships is everything. And I keep on saying that. Not only as far as growing this profession, but also in the recruiting world. Yeah. If you don't know the coach directly, I think it's extremely hard to get a player because no matter what that 17-year-old coach kid tell you, he's listening to somebody.
Yeah.
Like, are they going to say it's my decision? No, you ain't. The parents going to say it's his decision. Like, no, it's not. They're listening to somebody. And my biggest thing has always been, like, trying to find out who it is that they're listening to. Because it's somebody. Like, no matter what they tell you, they are listening to somebody. Mom might have an uncle or brother that used to play. Or the high school coach may have a buddy that's at a college level that they bouncing the information through somebody. So my whole thing has always been try to figure out who that is, who's helping them make the decision. And if you can get to that person, that's going to help you help persuade the family to come.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem.
All right, let's go back to Travis. Go ahead, Travis.
Coach, you said earlier, you, a guy that was on staff with you, you came from nothing and he was financially stable. but both of you dealt with a lot of stereotypes and biases and stigmas. What are the things that you had to deal with and that he had to deal with that you were referring to, if you don't mind going in more detail?
Yeah, I don't mind at all. Like, I was talking about Wes in that situation, but one of my best friends in the business is a guy named Doug Eslick. Doug was just on staff at UNC Wilmington. And I remember as I was trying to grow, because I wanted to be a head coach before I was ready to be a head coach. Now I feel like I'm more ready, but I thought I was ready 10 years ago. And I was nothing further from the truth. Me and Doug got real close during our time at Guard on the Web, and we have picked each other's brains. Like, one of the things that frustrated me is being an African-American in this business. We always get labeled as the recruiters and the guys that have to deal with the player relationships. It wasn't until me and Doug got real close that we had, like, real conversations. His frustration was the exact opposite. It was that people didn't think he could recruit because, you know, he went to Carolina and he come from pretty good money. His dad's like on the, I don't know, the highest boosters, the Rams Club at Carolina. So his problem was that he didn't feel like he got respected enough for being able to get players and be able to work guys out and do basketball stuff. So that's what I meant by that. And we all have our difficulties in this profession. It surprised me that, you know, I was frustrated. I was complaining about all the time, man. I keep getting hired because I'm the dude that could get a player. But his thing was like, dude, I can't get jobs because people don't think I could get one. So that was always an interesting conversation that we have on a personal level.
Appreciate it.
No problem.
Hey, Coach Gray, another question. Have you gotten feedback from your previous bosses on just some things you feel like you need to work on in order to be a head coach? And why do you feel right now you're ready to be a head coach?
Yeah, to be honest, I do a lot of self-reflection. And that's something that I've grown to do. I wouldn't always do that. I spent my first few years in this business trying to just figure out the business, trying to figure out the next job, trying to figure out the next player. I never took a lot of time to reflect on, like, what am I good at? What am I not good at? I remember early in my career, my first two bosses, their experiences were so different from mine. I remember sitting down with my guy, I was with at Wingate, and I love him to death. He's a real good friend of mine. And I asked him one day, I just sat in his office, hey, dude, like, oh, I want to be a head coach. Like, what do I need to take? Like, get me a job interview. And he looked at me and said, nothing, just show up. And I was like, that can't be true. You know, like, I don't know nothing about this business, but I know that can't be true. But his experience was that's how he got the job at Wingate. Like, he was at Notre Dame, and the AD at Wingate at the time was the aunt of one of those players at Notre Dame. And that player told her that he was a great guy and a good coach, and he just showed up at Wingate and got the job, you know. I did my own. Second experience was like me and Buzz Peterson, who again is a good friend of mine, you know, kind of the same thing. So I asked him, like, hey man, coach, like, help me out, help me figure this thing out, help me navigate this thing. And his world is so different from mine. You know, like, again, like, he got his references are different. You know, the connections to Jordan, the Pat Summit, and Dean Smith is so different from mine. So his perspective of what it took to be a head coach was totally, totally different from my perspective. Like, Dean Smith wasn't calling the AD at Tennessee and telling them that they should hire Andre Gray. You know, like, so that's the thing that I've always, you just have to learn how to navigate it from a position of a guy with no tree and no background. To answer the second part of your question, why I think I'm ready now, or why I believe I'm ready now, it's simply because I have a real good comfort level in what I am. Every staff that I've seen, been a part of, that haven't necessarily done well, was the leadership wasn't sure of how they wanted the program to look. You got to have a vision for what you want the program to look like, and you got to have an idea what kind of people you need to have around you to make that vision come true. And I think 10 years ago, if I would have got a job, I would have probably hired a bunch of my buddies, a bunch of the guys I hang out with every day. We're going to go have a great time. We're going to crush this thing. We're going to get all these players. But my buddies ain't necessarily the guys that balance me the best. Like, you guys know, I sit here and talk a hole through your head, as you probably figure out from this thing. I don't need a bunch of guys like me on my staff. like I need some guys to think different, act different, and would make challenge me mentally and also challenge the kids in different ways than I can. Because everybody learned different. So I need guys on staff, on my staff, to teach different in different ways and different formats. So that's why I think I'm most prepared. Just having an understanding of who I am, my strengths and weaknesses, and having a really good feel for what kind of people I need around me. The basketball stuff is, I don't think, is the hard part. Like, I could tell you how to guard the ball screen. Like, I know if a team going to 8-0 run, I probably need to call a timeout. You know, like, that stuff is simple stuff to me. I think just having a vision for how I want a team to play and having a vision for what kind of people I need around me is where I've grown so much.
Appreciate it.
Can you pinpoint, like, what is the biggest difference? Obviously, you've been at, like, all these different schools in Carolina and at similar levels to where you're at now, at Greensboro, you know, Charlotte, mm-hmm. Wilmington, Western Carolina, and you guys are having, like, crazy 4 straight 20-win seasons. Like, what's different about your program at Greensboro?
Again, I think the biggest difference, like, this program and when I was at Western Carolina, probably the two that's runs most similar. Difference is Larry Hunter was further along in his career, older than West, but they were very similar programs. The biggest thing is, like, there's a clear vision. West, how we play is how we want to play, and we won't veer from that at all. We won't veer from it in recruiting. We're going to recruit the kind of guys that can play for him. Not guys that could play for me, but guys that could play for West is huge. And then we spend an absurd amount of time on player development. And that's the other simulation that we had with the Western Carolina days. We spent a ton of time with the guys and teaching them our footwork and teaching them our terminology. So when we took the court, everybody was on the same page from the head coach all the way down. Like both these guys, Larry and West in particular, if you call – I don't know, ball in the air, feet in the air thing at Western Carolina. If you having the guys doing a shooting workout, there's going to be ball in the air, feet in the air, which is he ain't believing in 1-2 and hop into a shot. So everybody in our program had to get on board with the things that he taught. And I think that's one of the reasons why both of them were successful, and this one to another level from Western. But because West is really, really detailed and how he want this team to play and how he want us teaching, how the words want us saying to him, real detailed about the kind of kids we recruit. And I think the whole staff is on board with, it's not about us when we go out and try to find players and we have conversations with kids. There's no side conversations. And some of the programs I've been with that haven't been successful, it was.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, what do you mean side conversation?
I think we in this business, like, again, I always say, like, human nature is to survive, right? We would make human beings the greatest species on earth is that we're going to survive or self-survive over anything, right? We're going to do whatever we got to do in order to live as long as we can and then make our families do great. So when you get in these competitive environments sometimes in athletics, guys sometimes put their self-preservation over what's best for the group. And a lot of times it happens with guys a little bit less experienced. And sometimes it happens with guys kind of like myself where we get to that age where we want to be head coaches so bad, we feel like we got to chop other guys down to make ourselves look better. So that's what I mean by that. But it wasn't the staff that I think that wasn't all on the same page was mostly guys on different stages of their career and lack of understanding. I will go back and say this. Most of the guys that I worked with who tried to have side conversations with players, tried to undermine the head coach, tried to do stuff of that nature, I don't know if any of those guys still in the business. So that stuff come back on you eventually anyway. So you're better off just trying to build and have success as a group. Because I always laugh about like the Steph Curry, the analogy I always use or the example I always use is the Steph Curry Davidson staff deal. I bet you if you pulled up everybody who worked at Davidson during Steph Curry years, they got on their resume that they did something for Steph Curry. Like, they was the guys who found them or developed them. So it doesn't really matter who did what. So why not just do everything you can to have success? Like, it doesn't matter. Like, and Chris will tell you, like, I say this to him all the time, probably why you say I'm a storyteller. Like, it, no matter what player Chris signed from North Carolina, I'm going to get credit for it. Like, people going to assume, because I'm Drake Ray from North Carolina, I'm going to get credit for it. And so, and I'm fine, like, when guys – like, I signed a Serbian kid when I was at Charlotte, and we wound up hiring a Serbian guy on our staff. And I remember every article that came out, yeah, the Evo, the big, great Serbian recruiter. I'm sorry, my tech dog barking. But I was like, I'm the one who signed that kid. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. It's all about finding success.
So you've seen it all, right? Like, so you've been on staffs like that where it's dysfunction. Like, how do you like endure that bullshit that comes along with certain situations and stay the course and stay, you know, patient?
That's probably one of the toughest things in the business for me. It's been probably the biggest, one of the biggest challenges I've had is not only when you have that within the sisters, but sometimes you'll be with head coaches that you don't necessarily vibe with or have the same values of. My thing is, I mean, I've been lucky. I've always looked at it this way. Like, I'm not going to lower myself to your level. I'm going to try to bring you to mind as much as I can. And if I can't, I'm going to try to look for a different situation. And again, I've been lucky. I've made enough connections now where I can move when I need to move. I'm not going to work somewhere I'm not happy. And I'm not from some fairy tale land. I know that every staff has its difficulties. Most of us are type A personalities. And we talked about a little while ago that we all are professional manipulators or liars. So you're going to have some of that stuff going on, but I don't believe we have to tear each other down in order to find success for ourselves.
All right, we got a question here from David.
Coach, David Leafblad from St. Olaf College. Got a question for you. You talked about player development, and would you say that there was one thing while you do player development on the great years that you had really good winning seasons of potentially maybe your seasons where you didn't have as much success of seeing – like specific workouts you did with the players where you saw really good success in those years where you had great wins?
To be honest with you, I think all the really good teams and programs I've been a part of personally, it wasn't any particular skill that they emphasized. It was that they emphasized something. Like, they had a philosophy on how we did something. And I just throw out random examples, like, Larry Hunter's program, you couldn't throw a bounce pass into the post. You could not, no matter who you were, no matter what you thought that was, he taught air passes into the post, and he wouldn't move on that at all. Here at Greensboro, again, like, we're a pressure team. We're a ball to not team. Coach is a big analytics guy, so he don't really believe in the mid-range shot. And so our guys don't take a lot of mid-range jumpers, and it's something that the programs I've been a part of, they've been real successful. They have things about it that they don't want to budge on. Like, that's what they are. That's what we are. The places I've been where we had a little bit of failure, we have us assistants doing our own workouts with kids. Like, we all doing our own thing. I'm doing one with a kid doing the 1-2-step. I'm calling the flare screen. Another guy calling it a fade. So it was no common terminology or what we did with the guys. But that's probably the biggest. I don't think it's necessary about specifics of what the workouts are. I think the consistency of what the message we were sending the kids is what helped it.
Any other questions for Coach before we let him go? Anthony, go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, Coach? Anthony Brammer at the University of South Florida. From listening to you, you definitely have varying experiences with how you've gotten your different jobs. I was in the game 5 years ago on the men's side, and I always thought that, you know, I'm just going to grind and work for my staff, not really get to know other people. You know, my staff will take care of me. It turned out, you know, we got into a situation where, you know, we got let go and no one could really help. But what do you think is most important in your experience?
Yeah, it's interesting to say that, because when I first got in the business, I kind of thought the same way. And now that I've gotten older, I found the same thing about trying to pursue head jobs or becoming a head coach. So it's interesting that you say this. I think the bigger you make your network of people that you really, really trust, the longer you'll be able to survive on this side of it. And again, you heard me go back in my time. Almost every job I've gotten was because of a previous relationship. And it wasn't, the crazy thing was, most of the time it wasn't even the person that hired me or a member of staff. It was like a 2 degrees of separations type deal. So I think it's huge. I've learned, and like I said, as I've started to keep on progressing in my career, one thing I've always done and until the last couple of years was, like you, I always put my head down when I work, when I go get players, when I work my guys out. I never spent a ton of time getting to know administrators. And I kind of like, hey, they're going to notice my work. But one thing I've learned over the last few years, like, shoot, you better talk to them too. If you want to be a head coach one day, you better start talking to administrators, let them get to know you as well. Because they can see your work, but people, again, they're going to hire people they don't know in some capacity. They won't recommend, like, they make a cold call for you, but they can't really tell somebody about you unless they know you. So that's my thing. I actually spend time consciously trying to make relationships with people I don't know. And the cool thing is I won't force myself on somebody. If I don't vibe with you, I'm not going to talk to you, you know, so just simple as that. But I made some cool relationships from over the last couple of years, people I didn't know at all. So it's been cool.
I appreciate it, Coach.
Looks like we got another question from Tremaine. Go ahead, Tremaine.
How you doing, Coach Gray? We met a while back when you were at Charlotte, alma mater. I'm at Pfeiffer University now. Wanted to ask you, being a successful assistant coach, I noticed like a common theme that you kind of saying is, you know, being able to adapt what the head coach is doing, of course. I wonder how does that, you know, job with you coming up with your own philosophy to being.
Yeah, like I think you got you. If you can you hear me?
Yep.
I think there comes a point where you got to be comfortable with the guys that you work for, values what your opinions are. But the reality is, like, most of the time, 90% of the time, they already have an idea of what they want to do anyway. You can get them to switch, maybe put in a random play sometimes or put in a new ball screen coverage. But the one thing I found is, like, if you force something onto those guys they're not comfortable with, it typically won't work. The moment it doesn't work, they're going to go back to what they know anyway. I've always and I think the same thing with recruiting. It's kind of the same way. That's why I used to be real bad about trying to find a player when I was trying to build a name of pushing recruits on my head coach. Hey, coach, this guy could go. This guy could go. He could play. But the one thing I found, the head coaches won't play the guys that they're comfortable with. And they're going to play what they're comfortable with. So no matter what the kid is supposed to be, it better be a fit for what the head coach envisions his team to look like. So that'd be my biggest thing with that is just making sure as much as you can that your vision aligns with the head coach's vision. Now, at the same time, I'm always keeping notes of stuff like, man, you know, I like that. Like I always say, like, since I've been here at Greensboro, we run the little 1-2-2 press. Now I'm still in that. We run the 1-2-2 press when I get my own program. But Larry Hunter, we used to do special situations every day to start practice. I thought that was phenomenal. I was like, shoot, I'm still in that. So I've been able to take things from all these different guys I worked for that I really liked and also got to take some negatives, you know, like some of the things I didn't particularly like and just push those to the side as well. So it's been cool. I think the mix of those guys is really going to help me if I ever get an opportunity to run my own program.
Appreciate it.
Any other questions? Trey, you just mentioned it like a bunch of times already about getting your own program. Is that like the goal for you next? Like you want to you want to be a head coach? And if so, like at what level and like how soon? Like yesterday or a couple years from now or what?
Now, again, I said a little bit earlier, one thing I've gotten real comfortable is I'm comfortable in my own race, running my own race. Like I don't have to, I don't pick timelines in my life. I know like everybody says, you're supposed to, hey, what's your 5-year plan? I don't personally work that way. I enjoy what I do. I enjoy the place I'm at. But I would love at some point in my career before I retire to get my own chance to see all the stuff I've been building up would actually work on the other side of it. So I don't really put a timeline on it. Of course, if somebody will call and offer me a job today, if it fits me, I would take it. But I'm not in a hurry. I'm not one of those guys that's dying to, oh, man, God, have me a job before I'm next Christmas or I'm going to commit suicide. I don't really roll like that. That's not my personality. The rest of that is I go back and forth on a level, to be honest with you, Adam. There's parts of me who wants to try to win the Division I championships and be the last guy standing to cut down the nets. There are parts of me that don't really care. Parts of me is like, I'd be fine if it's a really good D3 job or a really good D2 job. So it just kind of, for me, it's more about the fit in the situation. I don't want to take a job just to take a job. If I go somewhere, I want to go somewhere where I go 50 years from now and go back and have my name on the court, have my name on the building. That's I dream about that kind of stuff more than I do a particular school. I want to build something bigger than myself.
It's probably going to be a North Carolina coacher.
Yeah, I guess so. We'll see. It's funny, like, again, how long this thing used to last? You know, I talk now, so I had guys on y'all freaking day.
Well, we're right at an hour. I mean, so it's up to you. I don't know what your time frame's like, but most of them last about an hour.
Well, I always laugh because when I was making the transition from high school to college, one of the ways I convinced my wife to let me do it was I was like, hey, babe, we're going to get to live over the country. We're going to move over the country and live in all these different areas. And it's going to be awesome. We're going to live in all these different cultures. And we laugh now that we got older. Like, we left the freaking state yet. Like, so people always put this thing on me, like, I intentionally stayed in North Carolina. But it wasn't the case at all. When I got in, I wanted to move. I wanted to live around. I actually had a couple of opportunities to leave the state of North Carolina. But both times they happened, or two times stand out most of my mind, it just the timing wasn't right. But I'll go anyway. I don't care. And we don't have children, just my wife and y'all hear my attack dogs over here barking. So we open to move somewhere else, but it just happens to be that this is where I spent my whole career. My last two jobs, I've thought about the North Carolina thing because I'm getting close to North Carolina retirement, which is also another weirdest thing in the world. There's an assistant coach that, getting close to retirement years in the state system, which is wild, but that wasn't done on purpose at all. The last couple of jobs kind of took that in my mind, like, hey, I could get two more years in the state of North Carolina as the road, but I'm open to go wherever. The relocation wouldn't really affect me if it was somewhere that fit.
Hey, Coach, I have something else. What is something you think right now, one or two things you think you should learn before you slide over one chair that you haven't learned already?
The one thing we talked about, like most of my career, I've kind of been like the recruiter guy. I've been associate head, I guess, twice total. Just learning more of the internal stuff on campus. I've done scheduling. I do schedule now actually here at Greensboro. I've done some equipment. I did that at Wilmington. Just learning like total budget stuff, I think is important for me to understand. The last couple of years here, I actually asked for copies of the budget. It's something I never really gave thought to until the last few years. Like, I always knew what the recruiting budget was, but I never knew what operating budget was for schools at different levels. And so now I actually asked some of my friends that would share it, like, what's your budget? Can you show me your budget breakdown? So that was one thing. Of course, the community service piece, because again, I'm on the road guy ton, most apps I've been on. So I never had to, like, Dre Ying, I come to this community service deal because you're gone all the time. But I've been trying to be more hands-on and figuring out where those guys are going to do community service and things like that as well. Making more relationships with the people that's part of the program. Because, again, I spent so much of my career going to get players and being in the gym. So that would be probably the biggest thing for me, just learning more about the budgets and how budgets work, and then learning how to deal more with the boosters at the higher stages.
Hey, Adam, I got a question.
What's up, Andy? Go for it, man.
Hey, Coach Gray, Andy Schmidt, North Texas. How you doing?
How's it going, buddy?
Great, man. Hey, couple kind of an open-ended question. I'm curious into your life. This is kind of off topic, but like what's kind of your routine look like, you know, with this whole, you know, new with the pandemic, what's your routine look like for yourself in terms of like how do you organize getting work done, spending time with the family and your dog, haircut, you know, what's it look like for you? And then what's it look like for communication with your players and your staff, and kind of like at the end, like I feel like you have a really good feel on things. How do you think this is going to change the landscape? So again, kind of your routine, your communication with your program, and then like open-ended thoughts on what it's going to look like moving forward.
As far as routine, man, it's wild. Cause at first I was going crazy. People that kind of know me know I'm pretty social. I like people. So it drives me nuts not being able to touch people. But now I kind of figured out what we do. We actually meet, we Zoom as a staff every morning at 10:30, and that helps me some. So what I do is we all have our different areas of the staff. So I usually start moving around by 8:30. And one of my big responsibilities, as you know, because we had conversations of scheduling, my schedule's still not done, by the way. So I usually spend my morning working on scheduling stuff until our staff meeting at 10:30. Typically, after our 10:30 meeting, I will continue doing scheduling stuff until at least about noon. I try to find as many of these platforms as I can to listen to. It's been beautiful for me, because I always seem to learn something. I always seem to pick up something when I hear these other guys talk. So I try to find some Zooms to do it in the afternoon if I can. I jump on about 4 or 5 nights a week. I jump on some of the ones that happen at night as well. Just kind of learn and pick up stuff. And I try to mix up the ones that I do. I do some that's about networking and growing. I listen to some of the basketball talks. There's a couple of guys in this area that does basketball Zooms as well, where we just kind of get used to talking about sharing ideas about how to guard stuff and things of that nature. So that's, I pretty much Zoom a ton. We're real big here about contact with our players. I would text everybody on our team every day. For the most part, what I try to do is I try to FaceTime 2 or 3 of them a day. And here we have academic groups. So we have 4 guys that we're supposed to touch every day anyway. So I won't always FaceTime those guys. I'll FaceTime some random dudes as well. But that's typically a day in my life here. What was the second part of your question?
Just kind of overall thoughts on how the pandemic's going to affect coaching, you know, what you're hearing maybe at your admin or bringing guys back, or just kind of what do you think it's going to look like moving forward, man? I know you've had some – talked about you're really self-reflective, so I'm just kind of curious into your thoughts.
I think the – outside the death and all that stuff, but from a basketball perspective, I love it. I think it's going to expose some people. I think all this downtime is going to expose some folks that don't really work. Because it's going to show up, like we always say, to the kids. You're going to find out who's been working, who hasn't been working. So from that standpoint, I think it's going to help. Because some guys that really in it for the wrong reasons, for the times they can walk around their polos in July and walk around their polos in April, some of those guys are going to get exposed when their bosses start looking at them for players and things of that nature. And what new ideas to have for the staff. So I think some guys will get exposed. One of the cool things, I think the evaluation piece, I'm a recruiter, so I can't knock the system and I adjust it to all the different ways we had to recruit. But I think now guys are going to have to learn to trust their own eyes a lot more. I think guys have to really learn to trust the relationships they built to this point a lot more. So I think from a recruiting standpoint, the guys that really work at it, the guys that have built good habits in it, are going to be fine. So going forward, I think you're going to see a lot more mistakes being made with recruits. I bet the internet recruiting is going to get crazy. It already has. When you see it now. I'm sure you do. Like, you see a kid get offered on Twitter now, and he'd get 10 offers that same freaking day. Like, dudes ain't watching film no more offering kids. Like, which is, it blows my mind. At least back in the day, the last few years, they could pretend they're watching the game in the AAU tournament and then tweet out an offer or whatever. But these guys are just offering kids just off of reading the Twitter offers. Like, it's wild. So I think, though, at first it's going to be ugly because some guys don't know what to do. Some guys got this business the wrong way. But I think for the guys that's really work at it, like these people in this room, the guys are trying to grow, I think it's going to be fine. I think it'll be good for pure basketball people because the people that's not pure basketball ain't going to know what to do with themselves.
Dre, you got time?
Appreciate it, Coach.
Yes, sir.
You got time for one or two more?
I'm chilling. I'm fine. My wife gonna come home at 5:30. My dog, I think he finally went to sleep behind me, so I'm good.
All right, let's do two more. We got Menelik, and then we'll go to Travis.
Hey, Coach Gray, my name is Menelik Fernandez. I'm from Toronto, Ontario. Appreciate you taking your time. I think you've given us a pretty good sense of who you are, and I really, really appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
My question is to you is, I'm sort of in a unique situation. I was an interim last year, and I'm possibly moving over a chair. I'm wondering what your opinion is on moving over the chair for a position that is right in terms of like life and all that outside of the basketball element, but is a program that has been losing and probably doesn't have the resources or finances. Where would you put that in your terms of consideration? What would you do if it was like given to you at the level that you want?
First, I'll tell you, right, you asked for it, so I'll tell you, man, you got to change your mindset. Like, fuck, everybody can win.
Like,
don't take it, you don't think you can win. I've always found it interesting, like, in my career, and again, I'm a storyteller now, so I'm going to spin this back to a story. I remember when I went to Winston-Salem State as an assistant, and that was Division II school, HBCU, here in North Carolina, if you're not familiar. I'm sure you're not familiar, but I remember my first day on the job, because I got in the habit, and it's the dumbest habit ever, so nobody else do this. But I won't ask what I'm going to be paid. I won't bring it up at all. So when I sign my contract, that's what the devil – that first time I see my salary. And Winston State was one of those situations where I was surprised how much the position actually paid. Because I was like, I never want to take a job for the money. I want to take a job because I think I could do it and do a good job there. So I just remember sitting there, and the guy showed me the contract. I signed the contract, whatever. And he was just apologizing. Yeah, I'm sorry. This is not that much. And I bring that story up because, you know, everybody, sometimes people talk about resources, and sometimes people think that others have more than you or than they actually have. The salary I made at Winston-Salem State was a D2 HBCU was more than the salary I made when I walked in the door at Western Carolina as second assistant in SoCon. It was more than I made as the top assistant at Wingate University, who's supposed to have all these great resources. He had two paid positions that made more than we made at Wingate, which is supposed to be a better school perception-wise. I think you just got to be creative. If you can't afford scouting services, the fine players, call your friends. Call people. Like somebody, you know how many times I've gotten links with the Rick Mellon's JUCO report from my friends? Like, you can't afford a Synergy account? Call your friends. Get their passwords. And so, like, resources, I've never seen as a not as an excuse, but that's not a reason for me for a team not to be successful. You know, you build a great culture. You know, put some good people around you that love to work and find somebody who's fine working for, I don't know what the assistant salary pool is, but who's going to do a good job for it and not complain about how much they're getting paid. Like I said, I slept on many of floors. I slept in my freaking car before. And maybe I'm crazy, but I have. And I just wanted to go to the Nationals down in Orlando, and I had no money. So, and the guy I was staying with left a day early, so I stayed in my car. I slept in my freaking car until one of my other buddies came to town. So, if there's a will, there's a way. So, my first advice would be just turn your mindset. You can, ain't nowhere. Every job that's supposed to be a good job is not a good job. Like, everybody have problems. Everybody have issues. So the first thing I'll say, just believe that you can get it done there. And if you believe it, your staff won't believe it, then your kids won't start believing it. You never know. Like, almost all the programs that now are supposed to have been good haven't always been good. They just built something else specially.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
There's that, I don't know if you guys have heard Dabo Swinney tell this story, but when he was interviewing to go from interim to head coach at Clemson, mm-hmm. he was in the meeting with the board of the directors, and one of the people on the board was like, do you think, like, you know, I think if we do some things here and there, like, we could get up to, like, Georgia's level. And Dabo, like, you know, tells that story, like, went off on him, like, no, like, screw Georgia's level. Like, this is our vision. This is what we're going to do. They're going to be looking up at us. Like, they're no better than us. So, anyways, sorry to interject.
That's true. That's the reality of it. Like, it's just amazing how the perceptions of what success is. Like, dream big. Like, chase it. Like, try to win over freaking thing.
All right, last question. Travis, what do you got?
All right, Coach, I know I didn't spoke a lot during this Zoom, but I really just want to flip it on you and how you answer a question for me from like a scenario standpoint. I know, you know, you're a great recruiter. You can build relationships. Like you said, you went to Orlando, slept in your car. You're kind of chameleon. Like, if you end up in California, like, you're going to learn the landscape of the land. You're going to learn every kid in California. You're going to be able to recruit that state. But when you interviewing for your head coaching job, when it comes about and say is in Northern Michigan, and the athletic director asks, well, you are pigeonholed or you're only a great recruiter in North Carolina, how are you going to recruit Michigan? How do you answer that question or sell that to not hurt you? You know what I mean? Your biggest strength can also sometimes be your biggest weakness, and recruiting at the college level is a big thing. So how would you answer that? I know you talked a lot about your recruiting background and stuff, but what would be the best way to phrase that answer?
Yeah, that's a great question. I hate people saying that when somebody asks a question. Well, doesn't mean those guys say that's a great question. Of course, I thought it was a great question. That's why I asked it. But anyhow, but I think, like I talked about a little bit earlier when I talked about being the head coach, I'm not going to even pursue the job that I don't think I could do. If a job didn't fit my demographics per se, I wouldn't even pursue the opportunity, to be honest with you, but I think I could pull it off somehow. The one thing, and I have to have this conversation a lot of times when I was going for assistant jobs, like the Buzz Peterson story. And Buzz was like, oh man, we don't need another Carolina guy. And that was my whole deal with that one, was like, I could, like you said, I could go anywhere. I've been around now long enough to know that I figured out, like, the key to recruiting is figuring out who the decision makers are. And you got to figure out who's making decisions in that area, who's helping the people that make decisions. And so I don't worry about going in strange lands. I've signed players personally from pretty much everywhere. I recruit the Southeast and more out of comfort for myself. But I go into Texas and Oklahoma and Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, Louisiana. I've recruited everywhere. I got players from everywhere. I just can't stand the cold. Would be a reason why I won't move to Michigan because I hate the cold. I can't drive in the snow. I'm a country mouse. It wouldn't be because I couldn't think I could do a good job up there. I've always said I hate recruiting in the Northeast personally because, again, I don't like driving in the snow. And when I see those guys in July, if I really like them, that's also when I see him down in Orlando, but somebody got to go watch him play during this season and go see their family. And that's just not me. I don't like being up north because of the cold. But if I was to pursue a job, if a job opened up where one of my really good friends got opportunity as an administrator, somebody I trust, and the position opened up there, I feel comfortable. I could go anywhere. I'm cool with people. And again, I have a real good sense for the people I need around me that have success. And I got a pretty big network of folks I can rely on. They help steer me right with staff. So the whole thing would be just finding somebody that really know how to navigate that area. And then I can figure out how to build relationships with the people I need to.
So you don't have like a format for learning a new landscape in a foreign area?
Yeah, because they keep changing, right? Like, I keep talking about, like, in my 20 years in this business, it changes. It changes so constantly. So I have to be able to change and adapt. And again, I just keep going back. Like, right now, for example, in this region, the big thing is knowing who run the travel organizations. Like, know who run the travel organizations. And it's kind of morphing and getting away from those guys to, you better know who the workout guys are in this region. 10 years ago, like, it was knowing who the head coach of the AAU team was, because that was the guy who brought the players with him to coach the team. When I first got in, it was more about knowing who the camp directors were at different places, because kids went to camp. So if you're able to get in a situation where you can work the camp, you can make relationships with those kids at night after the camp let out, or you can manipulate getting the kids that you want to recruit on your teams so you can spend that whole week of camp with them. So it's been evolving so much during my time that I wouldn't know when I got the opportunity, it may have changed again. So I wouldn't want to count on the way I do things now for a situation that might arise 5 years from now, because even during my career, it changed. I remember, again, like, when I first got in, it was a big deal to talk to the high school guys, talk to the high school coaches and the camp directors and things like that. Now, I've signed players, but I haven't barely contact with the high school coach. Now, I, of course, want to be friendly and reach out to them, but they have gotten so little say in where these kids go now. It's more the trainers seem to have a bigger pulse on where the kid's going than the high school coach now. So I had to adjust my mind. Like, hey, I got to figure out who the go-to trainers are in areas I like to recruit. So it's something to change again. That's why I wouldn't say, hey, this is my map for how I'm going to learn that region, because it might change again before I got there. Super Dave.
What's up, Dave?
Your big old head pop up. Hey, my dude.
Come on, man. Hey, Adam, can I ask a question real quick?
Of course.
I don't know if it's been asked. I was a little late. But, Dre, when you get your job, what are you looking for in a staff? And, again, if that's been asked, I'm sorry.
This is like an honesty panel, right? One thing that's about me, as you guys probably figured out, I'm a little quirky. I have to make sure somebody with me that's kind of more business-oriented. I'm a little over the place sometimes. So one of my most important hires is going to be the guy who's going to keep everybody in line as far as the details of the day-to-day. That's something that's going to be super-duper important to me, because that's not one of my strengths. Now, I could do my job, but it's not something I'm passionate about. So I got to have somebody on my staff that's real passionate about the organizational pieces. I think the second part is I better have somebody on my staff who would challenge me player-wise, because I think I'm the greatest player evaluator in the world. So I better have somebody on my staff who's going to challenge my opinions about players. Because if I've got to build my own team on my own devices, I'm going to have a bunch of 6'5 to 6'7 dudes that have no position. So I need somebody going, coach, we got to take somebody that can run the team. we're going to take somebody who – and I know I need these things, but – that's not the way my mind works. I'm always going to gravitate towards the positionless guy that's tweener or whatever that thing is. It's kind of what I love. Those two things I know for a fact I will need around me in some aspect.
Coach, I appreciate your time, man. Appreciate you doing this with us today.
No, it was big time. I really enjoyed it. A lot of new faces here. I don't know how y'all share. Would I be able to get everybody contact on here? Do y'all share like email, or do y'all do in the chat chain?
I can, I'll make that happen for you.
Cool. I need to send you $120 and I can be friends with all these guys then?
All right. If you want to join and you can chat with them directly on your own, right on the member site, but you don't have to do that. I'll hook you up.
Cool. The Rising Coaches. I'm a declining coach, so y'all won't even let me in your group. I'm like 55 years old. Like, I tried to apply 5 years ago. You told me I was aged out. I'm AARP.
Hey, if you're wanting to connect and learn and share, then you're a Rising Coach. Coach, appreciate you, man. Thanks again.
Thank you guys for everything. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Coach.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Coach.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches podcast. Quick reminder, write us a review, subscribe, and check out our website and consider becoming a member at risingcoaches.com.